The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
Hi. Princess too.
What kind of a princess are you?
Do you have magic hair?
No.
Magic hands?
No.
Do animals talk to you?
No.
Were you poisoned?
No.
Cursed?
No.
Kidnapped or enslaved?
No. Are you guys okay? Should I call the police?
Do people assume all your problems got solved because a big strong man showed up?
Yes. What is up with that?
She is a princess.
That's a scene there from the new Disney film Ralph Breaks the Internet. And it might sound like a typical scene from a Disney animated movie, but that scene alone, when it was first shown to Disney employees, was greeted by gasps. Because according to my next guest, the scene broke all of the Disney rules built up over decades. Eric Schwartzel is film industry reporter with the Wall Street Journal and joins me now. Talk to us about the screening of this scene for the employees, Eric. The film, was it in the works? Was it completed? What stage was it at?
It was a screening that was done during the production of the film. It was about 2 years ago. And the scene with the princesses that you played had already been approved by the company's CEO, Bob Iger. But when the scene was shown to some employees who managed the princess brand, they were aghast because this was an example of taking a princess brand that had been built and cultivated over decades and essentially treating these characters like they've never been treated before, you know, with irony or archness or self-awareness. That's not exactly what Disney's done with these characters in the past. So it was really a shock to the system.
And talk to us about the rules that they broke then. You know, we hear her saying, do people assume all your problems get solved because a big strong man shows up? But it's not just that was an issue as far as the Disney employees were concerned.
That's right. There have been these rules that are established at Disney and have been since the princesses were kind of grouped together as a franchise within the company. And one of the rules is that the princesses are not supposed to know one another. So if you have a lunchbox or a book bag with several princesses on it, if you look closely, you'll notice that they're all looking in different directions. Their eyes are drawn so that they are looking in different directions. And that is because among people at the Disney company, they really do believe that that consumers shouldn't think that Ariel and Belle know one another or that Elsa and Snow White are friends. And so to see a scene like this where they're all not only clustered together but interacting with one another, that also was a shock to the system.
And why? What's wrong with Elsa and Snow White knowing each other?
It's a rule that I think is invisible to most consumers. But when the princesses were grouped together as a franchise, you know, at Disney, they have all these franchises like Star Wars and Marvel comic books, things like that. But when they decided to treat the princesses as a singular unit, one of the concessions that was made, and this is maybe like 20 years ago now, was that the princesses would not know one another, even if they were, you know, on the same product. And so it's just kind of held over from there. I mean, there are some people at the company who think that's absurd and it's time to throw it out the window. But then there are some purists at the company who think, no, it was made this way for a reason and we should stick to it.
So if they've done that in this film, they have essentially broken that rule then, have they?
They have. I mean, that rule has been thrown out the window because not only are the princesses in the same universe, but they're talking to one another. They're having a slumber party together. That really is about as a big of a rule breaking as you can have when it comes to this.
And, you know, we've heard people like, and I think you quote them in your article, Keira Knightley, for example, I think it was Kristen Bell as well, talking about how they only show certain Disney films to their kids, or if they show another Disney film that they feel sends the wrong message, they'll go through it with their children, and that they did feel those issues. And these are, you know, quite influential Hollywood actresses. From the Me Too movement's perspective, which has had a pretty seismic impact over the last 12 months or longer, did that impact on the decision to have a scene like this included?
I don't think the Me Too movement impacted the decision to have this scene included, but I do think that it has colored some of the criticisms around the princess narratives. You saw in that Kristen Bell interview that you cited. Now, remember, Kristen Bell is the voice of a princess. Yeah. She's the voice of a Disney character in Frozen.
Yeah.
And she herself was saying that a conversation she'll have with her children is that, don't you think it's a little weird that the prince kisses Sleeping Beauty while she's unconscious? And that seems like it's an argument I think that's been made before, but it is one that takes on a new resonance in the Me Too moment.
Mm. What do they worry most about? Is it alienating little girls? Is it frustrating parents? What is their biggest fear?
I think that their biggest concern is getting the mix right of nostalgia and modernity. These are characters that have to appeal to tens of millions of little girls. These are not niche products. These are movies that are designed and made to make hundreds of millions of dollars at the box office. And you can't do that by catering to a niche subset of audience. So I think their struggle and their biggest concern is finding a mix that will let them appeal to moviegoers and moms in every part of the country. Not only the moms who are concerned that these narratives are too regressive, but also the moms who are worried that they're too progressive.
There was that interesting research into the amount of speaking time princesses had on screen and in comparison to their male counterparts and the male characters. And it was found that certainly the male characters dominated the speaking time. That was a couple of years ago. So have they changed anything with that regard?
You know, I think the arc of the princesses definitely bends toward what we would consider more progressive or independent portrayals. The linguistic study that you're saying was fascinating because it does show that even though female characters do speak more in the Disney movies, it is by no means reached a parity. Even on some of the more recent films, you're seeing some pretty big deficits between male and female speaking roles in the movies. Now, there will be a couple examples, I think, coming up where this might change a little bit. There is a sequel to Frozen that's coming out next year, and there is also a live-action adaptation of Aladdin. Now, Jasmine, from the original Aladdin, if you remember, she really doesn't have much to do, and that was reflected in that linguistic study you cited. I mean, I think it's definitely the movie of all the Disney films where there's the widest gap between male and female dialogue. Now, I'm told, though, that in the live-action adaptation, they've elevated Jasmine and made her more of a co-lead. They're trying to elevate her role, give her a more substantial, part to play.
Merchandise, by the way, versus box office returns. Where do they make the most money? Is it at the box office or is it via merchandise?
I think the box office is definitely still the more important metric because the box office drives toy sales. So if a movie does well, you'll see an uptick in toy sales. We're actually seeing across the industry a downward trend in toy sales attached to movie releases. And that's not unique to Disney. Every studio in town is seeing their toy sales fall whenever those toys are attached to certain movie releases.
And, when you were writing up this feature and speaking to people within the industry, etc., I understand Disney executives didn't speak to you. Was that a surprise, Eric, that you weren't granted an interview with the bosses at Disney?
Not really, because you're right. I'd interviewed, I think, nearly two dozen people for this story, many of whom worked or work at Disney as, at all levels, high-ranking executives to lower-level workers. But in terms of a formal on-the-record interview, that was not granted. And to be honest, it wasn't much of a surprise because Disney does not really enjoy getting into a lot of sausage making. Mm-hmm. They like to have their characters in their movies arrive to the public almost fully formed. Mm-hmm. And this kind of detail and debate, even though I've heard from numerous readers who say it signals the care that they take with these characters, it's definitely not the Disney way to publicly air these things before a movie comes out.
Yeah. I understand there is a call to include a lesbian love interest for Elsa in the sequel to Frozen. What are the chances that it'll happen?
Well, I think my story gets at that a little bit. I think that that's probably something, if I had to guess, would probably be a step too far for Disney to go, just because it would potentially alienate, you know, some viewers or maybe people in some countries. Now, I mean, they have made decisions before when it comes to LGBT representation, where they've weighed those concerns and still gone ahead. There was a subtle gay character in the Beauty and the Beast live action adaptation. I will say, though, you know, the movement for a lesbian love interest for Elsa still remains pretty small. I mean, it's a small corner of the internet, but I think that it's an interesting sort of example of the push and pull and the various voices and constituencies that Disney is always sort of hearing from and trying to cater to in these characters.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting times. Well, it is opening in our cinemas, so watch out for all the progress that you see in the current film, and we'll see in the future if in Frozen, the sequel, there is indeed a lesbian love interest for Elsa. It's Ralph Breaks the Internet. Eric Schwartzel is film industry reporter with the Wall Street Journal. Great to talk to you this evening, Eric.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
News Talk 106 to 108.